Welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Josh, founder of Referral Rock, that allows you to build automated customer referral and affiliate marketing programs. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Anna.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I'm always super happy when we have bootstrappers here because I know how difficult priorities can get. And well, we always say we have the soft spot for bootstrapping at Sauce Group. So it's even, you know, even better in a way. But, you know, before we get into the whole bootstrapping, how you were doing it with Referral Rock, let's maybe talk a little bit about your background, how you got to do what you're doing.
Sure. So I guess by trade, I'm started out as a software engineer. I wanted to say I am a software engineer, but the fact that I haven't really touched a code base in many years is probably more telling that I'm not really a software engineer anymore. But that's where I got my start. You know, I had an electrical engineering background, got into software early in my career and ran teams, did different things with that, and got to the point where I wanted to break out on my own, right? So this is maybe like mid 2000, it's probably like 2005, that time frame. And back when like TechCrunch was the biggest deal ever, like seeing companies on there, that type of thing. And I kind of got the, you know, the web 2.0 SaaS bug, or at least doing your own software bug, and had a first one. And I did the classic, I think it's a running joke among, you know, SaaS founders and indie hackers and things like that. But my first app was a notes app. So it was called Ubernote, and it competed with Evernote way back in those days. And we made a couple, I said, big mistakes early on, which I didn't realize were like, we did not see mobile as a trend, or we did, and we're like, okay, cool. Like people will, you know, use, they'll still use browsers. It'll be fine. Like we just did not invest at all in mobile, and boy, did I miss that boat. So in addition to that, then there was, you know, some economic turmoil in the, you know, I guess it was I think the real estate and type of thing in the like 2008, 2009 timeframe. And we ended up we got a lot of free users. We would rarely get any paid users. So the big lesson out of that was it's hard to sell to consumers in SaaS in that day. So, which then turned me into consulting for a few years, trying to, you know, lick my wounds as a bootstrap person, you know, rebuilding funds, starting a family, things like that. And then I always had in the back of my brain to get back into a SaaS model. But I was like, you know what? It's going to be B2B. I'm not going to sell to consumers anymore. Let me find a problem to solve for businesses. And that was the impetus of Referral Rock. And that's kind of where I got started into that.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I think B2C is way harder to crack because people don't really know what they want. At least with businesses, there is some clarity. But yeah, Evernote, oh my God. I mean, that thing is still alive. That's crazy.
I think it is. I hear of a lot of weird things where, like, I kind of keep my eye in that space anyway. Just I think a lot of us are all productivity nerds, right? Like we all have, you know, whether it's Notions or wikis or all kinds of different things to, you know, internally, you know, capture our ideas or different things. But yeah, I heard they're sort of just wandering. I think they've been bought and sold a few times and things like that. So
yeah, it was a huge acquisition. And that's when I remembered that it was even a thing. And it's like, oh, okay, it's interesting. But all right, so why affiliates and how you got this idea and what is it now? Like, is it a glimpse of the original idea this day, or was it kind of becoming what you originally thought it would be?
It's funny, is it actually is very close to originally what I thought it would be, although it took more wandering around to kind of hone into that. So the first the idea originally came from me actually sitting in a car shop, getting some work done to, I think it was like my wife's like Civic or something like that. So I'm sitting there getting coffee, you know, sitting in the waiting area while they're working on the car. And I see a person walk in and they essentially go up to a salesperson and said, oh, hey, you know, my friend Dan, or I don't even remember the name, like referred me, said to come to talk to you about, you know, getting a new Accord and whatnot. And I just saw like the salesperson, and I just saw this like scared look in his eye. Like, I don't know who Dan is. I don't remember what's going on. Like just, and all of a sudden he just snaps out of it and just starts like talking. Oh yeah, Dan. Okay. Yeah. Just like, oh yeah, you were looking at a gray Accord or something. Or, and I just sat back and I'm like, what just happened there? I'm like, was that like a referral? Maybe it was from like another car repair shop, someone that had a collision or something. And I was like, what? There's something that went on there. There's like a business transaction of some sort that I don't really know the details of. And I'm like, okay, it seems like maybe it was a referral program or a partner program. And I kind of stepped back and I'm like, okay, well, these happen and people know of Dropbox's referral program. People know of, you know, PayPal's old school referral program way back. And then at that time, you know, whether it was the Ubers or the, you know, Lyfts and those types of things. So consumers knew about them. And I'm like, okay, well, who does it for the car shop? Who does it for other local businesses? I was like, because they're the ones that are, you know, the people-to-people relationships are happening. And how does, like, does this jump over in the digital age? Or does it, you know, stay on business cards, written, you know, with names written on the back and things like that? So that was sort of the impetus, is I went and then quickly looked, didn't find anything out there. Anytime I Google searched for anything that was a customer referral program or partner programs, it was all tilted more for bigger businesses, or it was tilted towards e-commerce. And so if you were looking and you were a small business, you wouldn't find anything, because you'd go on these sites and be like, well, this isn't for me. This isn't what's talked about. So little did I know, I didn't know as much about positioning at that point in time, but I was like, okay, well, I'm going to build it, you know, for these small businesses. They have a different way of operating than e-commerce. You know, it's going to be a little bit more of maybe a mix of a CRM. It like has, you have to manually update who came in and different things like that. So that's where it started. And the original tagline, and even, you know, I got big into Google search. I learned that actually from the note software. We actually ranked really high for that. But that was one of the other lessons I took over from the original one, and then it went into Referral Rock. And our first line was referral software, not just for e-commerce, or it's like for any business, not just e-commerce. But that stuck out enough on a tagline and in a search result that I would get more people that were searching that couldn't find software that was meant for them and for us. So speeding up to now is, you know, we are definitely, you know, big on doubling down for SMBs. It is more, you mentioned the word affiliate. It is a little bit more customer referrals and like partnership referrals than it is like classic, you know, click affiliate link types of things. So we do have customers using that, but honestly, it is a term people mix and match oftentimes, like customer referral, referral friend, you know, or affiliate. We actually kind of stray further away from affiliate, although, again, depending on if they come in with that terminology, at the end, it's just what I call like people-based attribution. It's like someone sent them, and whether it's like a recurring payment or whether it's a coupon or whether it's a gift card, it's all pretty much like the same. It's just like a payout and business rules. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You were talking and I kept thinking about, you know, how your customer acquisition could look like, because we're talking something like 10 years ago and you mentioned SEO already, but I feel like there could have been quite a bit of like cold calling and just going door to door, because I feel like it's such a common misconception. Like sometimes if I see something like a tagline, we will help you digitalize your business. And I'm like, oh my God, it's 2025. Like everyone's right. Digital now. And then I kind of, I don't know, especially now, like I live in Vietnam and I go around and I'm like, oh no, nobody's digital here. I mean, come on, get out of that bubble. There are so many businesses that are still not out there on like Google and stuff. So yeah, did you have to actually do a lot of like sales-led, founder-led, let's use the modern terminology, let's say, and going door to door after a customer?
I never got to do door to door. I guess at first as a default, you know, want to sit behind my desk and code and do those types of things. The first thing I did, obviously, with the, you know, trying to prove it out was to just all the people I knew. So I like did talk to, you know, did some, I guess it wasn't necessarily sales. I guess in my brain, it was potentially sales, potentially customer research, right? Talk to my accountant and anyone else that was more of a small business, and whether it's like a, you know, someone that cuts hair in a salon, and I was like, okay, let me ask my wife and who cuts her hair. Let me, can I talk to the salon owner? And so I did kind of reach out and get a general pulse of that type of thing. And most, you know, honestly, if I followed their advice, because most were like, that seems interesting, but I don't know. And it was not necessarily the, you know, the Fry meme of like, here, take my money type of thing. So what, in the meantime, while I was doing it, I did was building up a lot of the like search queries and different things like that. So it probably wasn't in my initial idea criteria to do search. I think it just happened to fall into that. So I never really got to do in cold calling, although now in, or cold door to door or cold calling types of things. But I'll be honest, now with the, you know, today's day and age of SEO and different things and how that landscape has changed with AI, like I'm definitely looking at probably doing some of those types of things, whether it's more outbound or more events or more in person. Maybe not knocking door to door, but I could. I mean, it's something that dawns on us as we look for additional growth channels.
Okay, that's interesting. So you're saying you already feel like how SEO might have changed and it affected you in some way.
Yes. So I guess it was probably maybe just as the AI stuff was taking off, there was a lot of disruption in the search world as well. There was like more algorithm changes. Like you could usually account for maybe Google making like two big algorithm changes a year. And all of a sudden it just seemed like unprecedented, like everything else in the world, but it was like change kept happening where the algorithms were changing, you know, every couple months. So you sort of, what you previously would do is you would sit and look at your results, and then you would go and an algorithm would happen. You'd try not to react. You'd just like wait for it to settle down and then see if you need to make any structural strategic changes, like to how you do content and that type of thing. And now, honestly, it's like it keeps changing so often. So sometimes we go up, we go down. But honestly, the big areas where I think where we used to get more traffic were on terms we probably never should have ranked for anyway, just because we were good at SEO, but we weren't necessarily subject matter experts. So that's the type of traffic that kind of went away for us. But what we did realize is a lot of the traffic we did do, you know, doing for terms and expertise on referral marketing, on affiliate programs, how to structure rewards, how to ask for referrals, different content like that, we continue to rank for, and we continue to do that today. The bigger challenge for us is it's a kind of a smaller bucket of search queries. There aren't as much, and that's the big thing for us, is it's no longer like a growth channel for us, to where in the early days we could just, you know, keep writing articles. And then we started writing articles like outside of our expertise and would still be able to rank, and then kind of bring them, at least get some brand awareness or some market awareness about what we did. So it's definitely changed a lot. I think that like those easy terms, those things are now answered by AI overviews, or, you know, people going and searching in different places. You know, you could also go with like all the rise of, you know, all different more social media platforms. People, I think, are often even searching for different things on, you know, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or different things. Like people's search behaviors, I think, have changed over time as well. But again, that's where you get to see a 10-year lens of this type of stuff as you are looking at your charts and kind of like looking at how consumers or businesses sort of get their information.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed it as well. Like, and we own an affiliate company as well at SaaS Group, and they have been, and I mean, everything kind of educational around affiliates and partnerships and how it works has always been great because people want to figure out how that works and how to basically make more money, right? Because it's a very transactional kind of thing. But what we noticed is that, yeah, people want to see it. People want that bite-sized kind of piece of knowledge now instead of like having to read through an article. And I'm even noticing it now, like with this podcast, when we were starting, like all the attention was to, you know, how many people are actually listening to the whole thing? How many people are looking for the whole thing? And now it's, you know, when we repurpose and, you know, most of our audience comes from LinkedIn. So when we repurpose and when we post this shorts on LinkedIn, not even on YouTube, that's what we're looking at. Like, that's where we want people to see and like and respond and everything. So it's changing. Yeah, it's very interesting. Like, people want LinkedIn stuff, but in a TikTok format. Which is weird.
Yeah, we see this a lot too. Just like as these trends change, I think it's just whatever they're, you know, it's like, I heard, what was the, I think there was a quote or something about the guy that started Twitter. I forgot his name off. Evan, is it Evan? I don't remember offhand.
I'm also blurry.
Yeah. One of the big things he said was something just like, you know, you're always going to want to remove steps, right? Like, it's a good kind of methodology for building a business, building a SaaS, just, you know, human behavior. And all these things, like whether it's TikTok, is like, you just remove the steps. You would just like all the stuff of being educated. Someone worked really hard to pack down, you know, 20 minutes of reading into something, one, that's going to grab your attention, and into like, here's the highlight bullet points. But the funny thing is, like, most people just stop there, right? Like, there's going to be the nerds and whatever, like me or you, that are going to start there and then go deep down a different rabbit hole. And then I actually want to listen to the 2-hour long form version of that YouTube video and that type of thing, which is good. But it's interesting because it's like, we see this a lot, and we think about it a lot with our software as well, is like, how can we adjust more consumer behaviors? Like, what is the current consumer behavior? So can we model some of our UIs more like consumer things? Because if a business that's never run a referral program and they want to come in and they see a user interface that's more like how they navigate Instagram or TikTok or LinkedIn or different things like that, like, their curve is much, you know, their adoption curve is a lot faster and thinking about those things. So that's kind of where I was trying to go to with like removing steps. So if you kind of give them the more familiar parts, and that's where you saw like moving TikTok style types of things to LinkedIn, and LinkedIn saw it, they started wanting to do, you know, vertical video and things like that. It's just interesting. We're just like nibbling and nibbling and nibbling, getting down to just the short. People don't even have to think, how are they reacting? And
yeah.
And I don't know. It's sad, but also kind of interesting to watch. So.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. But, you know, it was also, for us, it was beneficial. We always knew that it works for us. And when, you know, we got this idea that LinkedIn is changing and moving towards this TikTok style platform, yeah, a lot of people were freaking out. And I'm like, you know what? We've been posting this stuff forever. Like, it's been working already. So we'll just keep doing this. And but still, it's very interesting. I wonder, you know, if it will keep getting shorter, because then it's very difficult to distill this content into even something, I don't know, half a minute. That would be ridiculous.
Right, right.
But about growth strategies, because I told you already, I've been listening to a couple of your previous podcasts, and on one of them, I remember you said that growth has always been pretty good for you. And up until 2022, it's been 50% year over year, which is great. But then it kind of started stalling. And I wonder, you know, what worked so well up until 2022 that, you know, and where you see it stops and, you know, what works now?
Right. I would say it's, you know, I don't know. I actually stepped back and thought about this the other day, just because my product manager mentioned the other day, he was, we were, you know, on a call and we were talking about, you know, the tariffs and all the stuff going on in the US and all that stuff it did to the stock market. And he's like, hey, has, you know, he's like, as I think about it, like Referral Rock never basically really been in a recession. And I'm like, actually, yeah, you're right. If I think about the time span, right, like we had our first customer in 2015. And in that time span, it was like kind of a, you know, an economic growth time. And, you know, and we talked about SEO and all of those things were sort of, I had a lot of, I guess, tailwinds going for me at that time. So I was on the edge of knowing more about SEO than most people. So like, we got a good foothold in there. So that led to a lot of our lead gen, not necessarily having to go door to door. We had a lot of inbound. We built a differentiated enough product at that point in time that it got attention to where people weren't essentially like, you know, there weren't other solutions. So we kind of found a nice niche and a gap at that point in time. So those were all like the tailwinds that were really helping us in those days. And then you hit the, then we, you know, when you talked about, I mentioned, you know, you mentioned about post 2022 when the growth kind of started to slow down. I'll be honest, that one was like, we still had the wins behind us, but we're starting to get bigger. So it got harder. Some of the things we were doing were starting to kind of break down internally. Like a lot of, one of the things we learned early on was for SMBs, like leaning into, you know, very strong customer support and onboarding. So one of my biggest lessons out of the gate with me doing founder selling, which was on the tail of, you know, you asked about the door to door, but since we were getting inbound from SEO, I would get on the phone with people and figured that out pretty quickly, that to get on a, maybe at that time it was like a WebEx, but then Zoom and different calls with people, that like I learned how to sell quickly out of that, just out of my own pain. Right. And it was like, oh, I could get people to sign up much more quickly and get them to understand the value prop, teach them the software much faster in those days. So that was also a edge for us that helped us have customers that would stick longer. And so what happened was we built up a team to do that. And at that, in those later years after post 2022, it just got harder. Like some of the team members that were with us in the early days didn't kind of scale with us. We had, you know, the internal operations problem. So it took us probably about a year to course correct and fix those things. Cause those are things where you onboard a customer and maybe you don't do it as well as you did a year ago, or the team is suffering and we don't have the right systems in place to scale those efforts. And then the customers end up being suffering, but you don't see that until, you know, probably 3-6 months later, right? We get a lagging indicator from those types of things. It takes longer for those to, once we realized it was like probably 6 months in to having, you know, poor fit customers, like customer health and things like that.
So then it took us probably another 6 months to a year to fix that. And then another, that time period to actually start to see the results and changes to the behaviors. So that was one thing where post 2022, we, you know, kind of starting to flatten. And then once, you know, once we took about a year or so to fix that, and then we started to grow again. And other things we've done since then to grow is we did a big, at that point in time, we did a big price change about a year or so ago. But again, we're like, as I look at it, we're all just balancing these, you know, if you look at the SaaS metrics, you look at how many leads are coming in, how many people are onboarding, how many people are you selling, how many people are you keeping, and that type of thing. So all those parts, I look at them like, you know, which areas of the funnel essentially, you know, need the most work. And right now, you know, right now, honestly, like leads are lower than they've been in the past years. It was always, you know, you look at these and you go, man, if I could do all the things that I'm doing well now, but if I could do them 3 years before when times were good, when the leads were higher, when the economy was better, when people were, when there was more money in the system for multiple reasons, all these economic, I would just say like the economic atmosphere was better. Like, oh man, where would I be now? Right. But you can't have that. So you kind of look at these things as a bootstrap person and you are making adjustments, and essentially, you know, what, you know, sometimes flat is okay. And also just growing and being profitable. You know, I go back and look at, you look at other competitors or you look at other businesses at this point in time, and you know, you're kind of a, still feel lucky. So even the, as much as the growth line may not be as strong, but you still see the underlying pieces underneath, the underlying health metrics of how long your customers are staying and things like that. So the next sort of line for us is a lot of the stuff we're looking at is, again, in those funnels, like where can we make improvements? Where can we make other segmentation? Where are we looking to build new product in other areas that can, you know, expand our existing customer base?
All right. I just want to come back to what you said about the team and, you know, the team suffering.
Sure.
And if you could maybe tell me a bit more, like, what are we talking about when we say like team suffering, and how do you spot it? Because I can totally understand that, you know, teams with the growth of the company may have certain challenges facing them, and you know, but in their like fully remote, and you guys are also fully remote, it's very mm-hmm. difficult to spot. And yeah, I was wondering how you did that, and what were exactly the challenges that you had?
So the challenges we had probably were due to also, I don't know, we've started to kind of align with certain rules in our brain now, like how we operate, right? So I think in the beginning, I like to think a little more optimistically about people. And I think I still am very optimistic about people and their capability, but also understand they have their own lives, right? They don't necessarily want what I want, even if I want something good for them to like advance in their career and different things like that. Life happens to different people in different times, and they have their own priorities. And, you know, at that point in time, we probably had a team of, you know, I would say three or four, and this was more in our sort of onboarding services area and what we called customer success. And that's probably another one of those quick lessons, which was when you look across B2B and you look at customer success and you look at salaries in customer success, they're actually pretty high, but mostly because the people that took the term customer success were mostly B2B enterprise. So their ACVs are very high, and trying to also, you know, they might be working with customers that are a $100,000 a year customer. Now, paying a person to maintain those accounts and making sure that customer stays, like paying them a high salary for a customer that is $100,000 a year, you know, account makes a lot of sense. So our accounts are not $100,000 a year. They're more like, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 a year. So what happens is we had, you know, some employees that at that point in time that like looked at those salaries and they felt very displaced and jaded. And much as we can explain, and also, you know, they were getting offers from other companies because they're like, oh, you have a customer success role at ReferRock and you've been doing these for years. Like, we can now pay you like 2 times as much. And so we kind of lost a lot of talent from that area. And it was like, I was like, our unit economics don't make sense to pay for that. And I think for, you know, really thinking about how the economics of your business works, like I've always been pretty savvy with that. So it probably stopped me from making mistakes that could have been made one thing and turned it potentially worse. And so those were some of the challenges. So there were some, like, I would say miscommunications in those. So honestly, part of the big fix for some of those things is like, we stopped calling it customer success. We like changed the name of the role. We changed the name of the department because really they were onboarding. They were just onboarding specialists. They were not, they don't run QBRs. They're not like looking at, you know, at that age. And I think it's still around. A lot of customer success was paid on the renewals. We didn't have a big renewal cycle, all the types of things. It was a very different job. We misnamed it. We misnamed it because we didn't know any better. We thought that that's what that was called, and everyone was calling that, but it soon became more of a B2B enterprise thing. So that was a big thing. I would say the other one was in the early days, in early doing remote, since we had a lot of flexibility, and at that point in time, you know, pre-COVID, remote was not as big of a thing. A lot of people didn't know how to do it. And some people that were, the great talent we found, you know, we could find them in different places in the world, expats living in South America, but they might be US people. And these were great finds. And some of them, one person I remember, you know, had a computer science degree, kind of liked to travel, and he kind of hopped around on these little like customer support types of jobs. But he was a goldmine for us because he was technical. Like, he could do, you know, tier 2 technical support. He could onboard people. He was basically like a 3-tool athlete that could do all these different things. And like, I think he's doing very well for himself now. But at that point in time, like, he couldn't find a job that could fit him. And we were that type of thing. And later on, it became much harder to find people like him. And we needed to change the dynamic of our team. And we used to look for like 3 skill sets. And those are honestly kind of unicorns now, right? Like, but because we had remote, that was unique enough that someone's like, well, I only fit in that remote bucket. Like, I don't want to live in San Francisco. I don't want to live in New York or any of these other, you know, big talent hubs. They wanted to travel. They valued flexibility and lifestyle. But they were very smart, very capable, very talented people, and we could find them to join our team. And later years, it made it much more difficult. And now we go down to, I think we really go down to like 1 to 2 skill sets in our hiring profiles, where we used to go for 3 strong skill sets, and we used to find them. So we were, for a while, we're like, you know, very frustrated because we're like, where are these people? But again, the economic landscape changed, remote changed, all these other things where we had a arbitrage or opportunity was no longer that. So then, you know, we needed to shift our strategy, which was more of like, we needed to train more people. We kind of shifted more to the thesis was like, I should be able to walk into a hotel and there's a great concierge person at that desk, and I should be able to teach them enough to like onboard customers, and they wouldn't necessarily need to know the technical piece, and we can staff a technical person just to do the technical things, but we should be able to find those people in spades and give them a great opportunity. And that's kind of the more of the hiring strategy we shifted.
All right. Yeah, that's very interesting. Thanks for walking me through this. I have a few more questions, and you know, because we're in this referral, maybe let's not go affiliate, but partnership space. What do you think is kind of the winning strategy to make partnerships work, to make this referral work? Because I think, yeah, a lot of people get into this thinking, yeah, it's very kind of transactional. If we're talking affiliate, post that link and, you know, easy money. But you know, there is this whole kind of magic around how to find the right people and how you could post that link in this exact place where you would be actually making the money. So yeah, how do you, because you said you also have lots of content about that, how do you educate those SMBs on how to make this work?
Well, it's hard. It's hard because, yeah, everyone views it as transactional. So that's good for us and good for a lot of, you know, people that want to use this as an opportunity to grow. If I first mentioned the affiliate one, so we have done a good amount of that. And I think the biggest one with affiliates is understanding who your affiliates are. And oftentimes now, especially you think about, you know, whether it's influencers and different things like that, it seems easy, but then you also, if there's, you know, it's like, oh man, if I just got, you know, Kim Kardashian to share my link, that would be awesome. And the reality is, like, she doesn't care about, like, your software. And also, she's got probably bigger brand deals, better things that are not going to, like, be a per pay on the back end. And just, they're going to pay per post, they're going to pay for the brand awareness, those types of things. So I think from affiliate standpoint is like making sure you know who your affiliates are going to be. Do you already have those strong relationships, those connected people that are going to share your link? And who else are they, who else is kind of competing for their attention to sponsor or to share different things? So that's where I'd probably start. And most people could probably figure out quickly when they're ready for that or if they're ever ready for that. So it's like knowing, you know, out of the gate who those people are going to be. And on the flip side of like same thing with partnerships and I would say it goes kind of like affiliates and then partnerships are the ones that are, you know, the ones you hold a little more dear and close. So just starting a partnership program, like you have to seed it first. You have to know who's going to join it before you even create it. So you can, any of these things you can do on a quick, you know, tracking with spreadsheets or different things, or from the affiliate side, you know, using a basic link tracker types of things just to see if there's going to be something, and then you figure it out later. So I would say like starting with some of those things and making sure you know who will be doing the sharing is probably the most important part. On the customer referral side, still similar advice, like you want to make sure you know who's going to be doing the sharing. So it's a very telltale sign that if you don't have customers, you can't run a customer referral program. But not everyone sees that because they're like, well, you know, this is a growth hack. This is just going to like, any one new customer means I'm going to get three new customers because I'm running this. And it's like, not quite, right? All the big fabled, you know, referral stories usually come from companies that already have network effects. So, you know, whether it's the Ubers and the PayPals, they already have other things going for them. The referral programs are great, but they add a layer on top of what all the other sort of growth flywheels that are going on. The other one on customer referrals is like, and also probably it's true probably for affiliates is, do you actually have a fan base that where people really love your product, right? Are they already doing word of mouth, or are they already telling their friends? And that, you know, are you already getting kind of the love for the product or services that you're already doing? Because that's really the seed of, aside from adding incentives on top of it, it's sort of like you take the two of those together and they become a growth channel. They become very successful with those types of things. But without all those elements, whether it's like the people doing the sharing, having a good base of a product or service, and it just making sense to do the sharing and whatnot, because some industries don't really have, you know, strong sharing just because it might be a more like you're not going to probably have a great divorce lawyer referral program because it's like you really want to tell people that you know that's what you're trying to get people. It's like you kind of out yourself for different things that might be more personal. But anyway, that's probably the a lot of the advice we kind of pack into a lot of those blog posts and weave them in as well.
That's a great example, by the way. But yeah, makes great sense. Are you using Referral Rock for Referral Rock? And
we
are you going after if, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because we are, but I would say we are just on the edge of probably the right size fit for our base. I know you talk to a lot of startups and things like that. And I'll be honest, startups usually aren't great fits for referral programs per se. They can be with different, but most of them have other flywheels that are more important, other channels they should be looking at. It, you know, all these things are sort of compound interest on all the other activities you're already doing, which is great when you get to like mid-size and bigger. Or for us, oftentimes it's when there's a very high value. Like honestly, one of the best types of customers for us is something like an HVAC company where they're selling a $10,000 install where they can afford to give $500 or they can afford to contribute $500 to a local school because they're running a referral program. And they're great because they only need to get two or three of those and they're super happy with it as well. But for us, like we're in this middling, like we've talked about our ACV and our price points we're not like, you know, $50 a month, but we're also at a point where we can give an okay, you know, a decent amount for a referral program, like $200, $500 types of things for a new customer. But at the same time, like our volume isn't super high, right? So like you have to balance how big is the funnel, how many people are coming in, and how many can you convert type of thing. So we also, I don't know if it's that cobbler, you know, cobbler has the messed up shoes or whatever, that type of thing. But it's also one of those things, it's hard to prioritize running your own program. In addition to, I always worry that people are going to be confused because they're setting up their referral program. And then we have like links and say, join our referral program. And they're clicking in. They're like, wait, is this my program? Is this their program? I don't know what's going on. Like, I've always wanted to do, you know, more hacky things like, okay, do a dark mode for ours, like do goofier things to really make sure it's, you know, from the brain perspective, it's differentiated enough that they're not going to get confused with, wait, am I setting this up? Am I participating? It's like, we have enough challenges with like multiple personas because we're always explaining, well, you have a referral and you have the person doing the sharing. We call them a member of the program. And there's enough kind of like having your brain jump to different user types and user personas. And then we add in our own. So it's always kind of on the low back burner of, we'll take a sprint and do some updates, but I'll be honest, it doesn't always have our most attention or our latest ways of you know, running referral programs, but it's always kind of a sore spot. So I'll be honest.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. I really loved how you said it. You know, it works for startups who already have something going on for them. And that's so true. Like all those posts. And I mean, I was referring to the company that we own at SaaS Group, and it's Rewardful, and they're like big and affiliate now, and they do those posts which are amazing, and they get so much attention where they say like XYZ company has added this amount of money to their ARR or MRR mm-hmm. with Rewardful, and the key word there is edit. You know, mm-hmm. they already had a lot going on. They already had all those millions and millions of ARR by doing, you know, a lot of great stuff and having so many customers who then thought, oh, great, you know, that's a good side hustle and I'm going to do affiliate for those guys. So yeah, it's a very important thing to understand that, yeah, it doesn't work unless there is something, some essence to what you're building.
SaaS Group is partnering with SaaSTalk USA, taking place May 13th to 14th in Austin, Texas. This is where heads-down SaaS founders and their teams move their business forward. As a partner, we have 30% discount available to share with our network. Use code SaaSGroup30 in all capital letters and see you there.
Right, right. It needs at least, you know, just add water, but the water is your customers or whatever. So you can't just have the additive only. So.
True. Yeah. All right. Well, I have just a couple more questions. The usuals here, something, you know, to reminisce about, maybe something to reflect. Yeah. What has been the biggest win and the biggest failure in your journey with a Referral Rock? And it can be for the company or for you as a founder.
All right. I'd say the biggest win was honestly like just kind of just even getting this off the ground. So it was probably like, if I go back and think about the things that had to happen in All In Sequence, it was maybe less, I feel like, you know, you look at different businesses and you look at different SaaS and whatnot, and you see people like finding great markets. And like, I probably wasn't as diligent in it, but once I picked enough that it was successful enough. But I do think that's where like a lot of people stopped, right? Like you could have easily on any of these companies, like looked at the initial churn and been like, oh, this isn't a great business. But a lot of the things we've been doing is basically probably the true kind of little bootstrapper mentality. It's just like grinding it out and figuring out how to get over these little, you know, plateaus and, you know, kickstart growth again. And that's kind of how I see it. So those are probably the biggest, I would say, overall win, is just staying the course, kind of continuing to find, you know, my own energy and building honestly a great team, because without them, I wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things we're doing. So maybe that win was like creating the team and the atmosphere to kind of grind out the situation. So that's probably the biggest win out of it. The biggest failures are probably more in line with that same grinding mentality has a stubbornness to it, which I cited earlier about not jumping on a mobile trend. So like I've been in software for 20 years or so, but like there's been all these big trend changes, right? There's been mobile, there's been SaaS, there's been, now there's AI and all these other things. And I never really jumped on any trends. And that's probably the biggest failure, is not necessarily looking at the environment enough to being like, there's actually a unique opportunity at this time in this thing. And I think that same flip side of that stubbornness to grind out a business that has like some success and making it, you know, making more out of it because I'm at the helm. But that other side is like, I'm slower to react. Like, you know, probably could have raised money at a much bigger value, a very strong valuation in, you know, 2021, 2020, maybe 2020, 2021 timeframe, but we didn't. And like, I could, you know, there could have been there could have been different cash reserves or different things. So my slow reactions to trends are probably like leading to other failures. You know, could have jumped on mobile earlier with Ubernote and maybe it'd be a totally different story and a different trajectory. So, because that's what's interesting, is watching the right mix of the right founders that can grind some things out for the hard times, but they also are looking for the right opportunities, and maybe they don't stick as long, right? There's maybe a happy medium in between, but kind of I am who I am. So I kind of comes with both those faults that will have different opportunities. So.
Interesting. Having said that, are you actually doing something with AI for Referral Rock? Or are you waiting
no,
it out?
Yes, we're looking at the AI stuff as a I don't think it changes our business too much, because a lot of the things we're doing there's not necessarily a lot of a lot of the AI stuff is this generative and creativity side of a lot of things. And from our product standpoint, like from what we do for customers, we are not too threatened by it, right? So like, I do think it's still, if someone wants customer referrals, they still have to have an app, and it's still about the relationships. It's about the customer service and the product and the different things that company is doing, why they're going to get more referrals. And again, the Just Add Water, we're just plugging into those pieces. So it's building on the base of relationships that the customer is building with their customers. But for us, the biggest AI things is we are looking at ways to look internally at our team and making sure our team is not going to just be head in the sand about AI, right? So looking at our dev team, making sure they're looking at AI tools and kind of pushing a little bit, because it's easy to get set into patterns. And it might be like, okay, once a quarter, we're going to, you know, run evals and look at our own test cases of like, what other things can we apply to AI? Or let's do like a break week for the whole company and just explore AI tools that could help us with our job. So just like, don't just do it on the side. Let's make a, you know, focused time for it. And maybe leading up to that, we're kind of like, okay, list all the different types of things that you think AI could do. So you have a set of projects, so you don't just end up on that AI project week and sit there and be like twiddling your thumbs, right? You know the different things that you had opportunities that you want to go after. But I think that's probably the big thing is like being the internal marshal for pushing forward with those and knowing that we are going to be embracing those things. And it's not like we're trying to replace any jobs because as we grow, we can still keep the same people and we don't necessarily have to add staff. And I was like, anything we can do internally to, you know, level them up, not only preparing and helping us, but also preparing them for their own futures if they're, you know, going to find jobs other places and just knowing that, you know, it's a tool and you should learn how to use it or you kind of get, you know, left behind. But at this point in time, I am much more of a, like, I'm more out in front looking at those types of things, seeing how I can apply it, seeing I can, and I might need to push with a little more inertia internally to make sure that we are. So it's probably more on like the tooling upside internally for us and looking for small opportunities where we can introduce it into our app. But I also know it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because, again, once the things we're building, you don't want a dynamically changing, you know, referral reward. It would just like not be that helpful. You know, what would be more helpful is just basic stuff like, oh, you know, A/B test your thing with two different program offers like that you can do today. You don't need, you know, AI creativity to necessarily do that. But there could be ways we can maybe make reports better, like, oh, we can scan through logs and maybe bring insights to customers better than us trying to algorithmically figure out, you know, who are your best referrers. Like we can also do, oh, maybe there's some things here and that might be, you know, giving AI access to some, you know, customer activity logs could be interesting to see what it pulls up. But most of those things I don't think are going to necessarily like be substantial movements for the business, but they're just going to be like, oh, what other ways can we sprinkle in AI in different use cases?
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's actually exactly what I thought. Like if you were bringing AI to affiliate or partnership or anything, maybe that's kind of the use case where you kind of give it an opportunity to be a matchmaker in a way and kind of see what we might have been missing. But it's also really great what you just said about exploring AI tools for your team and dedicating time for it. Because I think like if you're a very lean team, everyone's doing their jobs. And sometimes you kind of want to automate something, but man, you don't have time to learn how to do this. So like having that time and focus on, okay, we can actually change something in our workflow to be more efficient, because efficiency is, yeah, still something that we're all longing for some reason. I think that's super important.
Yeah, I think it's been helpful to be like definitely out in front with that. Like when we've done, you know, monthly all hands, we brought that up as some topics, like just even as an opener to the call and just saying like, hey, what are some fun things you've used AI for, right? So just, I think making sure for leaders to kind of put that out forward and the things they're thinking about, so that the biggest thing I think a lot of employees are thinking about these days is just being scared that they're going to get replaced. So if you're more forward about kind of talking about it and talking about your point of view and just bringing that into the room instead of it just being this sort of taboo topic that people don't talk about, or like, oh, are you using AI for your job? I don't know. Like, should they know that I'm using AI to do my job? It's like, no, we embrace that. We actually look forward. We'll invest in you doing more for that, right? And I think making sure that conversation is out in front will help not create just like a weirdness when you're all of a sudden walk in and be like, hey, we're bringing in this AI tool. And then someone's like, is that going to replace me? Does this have a job? Like, all, you know, people's basic fears of, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt all can creep in with all these changes. So for leaders out there, I think it's important that you're sort of, if you are looking at those, like, talk about them, create Slack channels of saying, hey, share your AI tips and tricks. Just make it okay, right? Make it normal.
So. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. All right. The last question is always about a hack. So something that you're using or something that works for the team, for the, you know, product development, anything that you think would be beneficial for other founders to know.
Okay. I think my favorite hack that we did, aside from other ones we talked about, like, you know, doing onboarding early and things like that, my favorite hack is a drop down to our sign up and demo registration forms. Essentially, we've over the years we've rolled our own sort of lead scoring, like with demo requests and signups. Obviously, you take things like, you know, what company do they work for, what job roles, different things like that. But one of the things we did is we have this drop down, and anyone can take a look at it on the website. But it's just it basically just says, I don't remember the exact phrasing, but it has something along the lines of like, you know, why are you here? And there's like a drop down. It's like, hey, I'm trying to get more referrals for my business, or it's very, I would say specifically worded to understand where they are in the buyer journey, and understand what pain points they have. Like basically I can tell the difference between a person that just, I think one of the first ones is like, I heard referrals are a good thing. So it's a very sort of like a newbie type of question, where later on their ones is like, I'm looking to replace my referral software, or that's a more advanced, like, hey, they are well educated in the funnel. They are looking to switch. They understand how referrals work. Or another one's is like, I'm trying to start my first program. So like understanding that, you know, helps qualify and internally metric like where they should be going. Should they be going to a pre-recorded demo with a good experience? Should they be going to our best rep? Should they be, you know, where should we route them and that type of thing? So that's really powerful for kind of internal operations, but it was also really powerful for positioning and understanding our customers, because it's enough insight to understand like we might have very qualified big businesses that are coming in. And what we ended up realizing is how much of our customers need more just awareness and general education. And like what we thought was more of like, oh, we get more people switching from different things. So it was an important input into doing positioning exercises, which like help us better understand like the percentages of these segments of where people are. So it's a quick drop down that for your own industry or your own business, you could probably figure out like what is something and take some time to think through the answers. One tip I always do is make sure the most that make them very specific. Someone isn't going to misclick something. Like if you read your answers and be like, if I was this, would I click this one or that one? You don't want that. You want them to be very like, you know, deterministic that this is the right, that, you know, I've never run a referral program and I want to run one for the first time. Like that's like a very specific answer, and making sure that person's selecting that versus like, I'm looking to switch vendors, right? So even having some basic questions like that could be, you know, a ton for your own insights, a ton for like understanding the base of your customer, also seeing how it changes over time. So I think it's a really, really valuable thing. I haven't really seen other people do it. It's something we kind of came up with. I've definitely seen other people do things like, how did you hear about us and different stuff like that. But something that helps like you understand more about your customers, you know, can be obviously really powerful in a lot of different ways I spoke of.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool trick. And, you know, it's easy enough that it doesn't really create additional friction that people are like, ugh, another survey that I have to go through.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. That's pretty amazing. Let me take that too.
And I actually have that. I might have wrote what was Twitter then or X like thread about it. I'll send it to you. I think I have it actually on a blog post now. I think I preserved a lot of them onto a blog post. So I'll send you that. It has other information on sort of like, you know, some of the onboarding questions or some of the different things through that helps us do our own like lead scoring, which I think is definitely impactful for anyone that is doing both sales and or, because we kind of sit in between doing both, have an inbound sales team, but also have a self-service side as well. So
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, thank you so much. And happy to link it below the recording as well. And yeah, thanks for being here. I mean, it's a great story. Lots to process and lots of learnings. So yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it was great. I apologize. I get a little long-winded. I know some of the questions start with like growth, and then I just kind of, my brain goes into all the different things. And that's what happens when you have 10 years of stuff that has happened. So.
No, that's good. Maybe then we should do another one and let you unload more wisdom here. But yeah, so far, so good. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.